That is what HD stands for. Hot dog.
That's what I thought. When I watch stuff on Netflix, I'm always like, God damn it, it's not in hot dog.
It's not in hot dog.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 137, and we have a special guest today. We've got Luis Hernandez from Jazz Punk.
Yes, this one's an awesome one because when we went up to PAX East,
Prime,
we this kind of became our secret love, this game.
Oh, secret. So, I don't know if it was so secret for me.
I guess it was. It started out being a secret. And then we told everyone. But this game is phenomenal, and it's coming out very soon from Adult Swim Games. I think it comes out next week after this airs.
It'll be
right around there.
February 7th, right? We're about a week away.
Correct.
February 7th, Steam, absolutely.
And you can pre-order it.
So it's
right
good
now.
Stuff.
And it's a good, it was a good conversation about all kinds of things like comedy, music, mm-hmm. analog synthesizers, all kinds of crazy stuff.
Yes, it was very fun. He's an awesome dude, and actually both of them are really cool. So because we got to talk to them, if you go way back to the PAX Prime episode, there's a little chunk of audio when we talked to them back then. But the game is awesome. We are excited for it, and we look forward to you guys hearing the talk we had with him.
Let's do the rundown.
Of course, we're gonna have our interview with Luis. So we're just going to talk about what we've been up to, and then we'll come back after the interview with our Nequato this week, which is, what is the strangest or most unique game or film that you've ever experienced? Sort of in
order. Got some good ones too.
In honor of Jazz Punk, if you will.
Yes.
Which is quite strange and unique.
That's putting it lightly. I can't wait for you guys listening to try this game because we talk about it. It's so incredibly hard to describe.
Yeah.
But it is a very unique gaming experience, and it's honestly unlike anything I've ever played before. And that's saying something.
It's
so.
Especially hard to describe because, did I just say weird words? I think it's especially?
Yeah.
I'm having a brain fart. That's a word, right?
We're recording it in off time, so.
Oh my god!
Yeah.
So it's harder to describe because it is a game rooted in comedy, and I think the norm, we talk about it in the interview, but the norm of that is not necessarily what this game actually is. You know what I mean? And then to try to explain what that is, you kind of have to like ruin jokes or you know it's weird. So I hope. I can't wait. We're excited. I'm excited. Jazz Punk. Yes.
For sure.
Yes.
But it's today's episode is brought to you by Audible, right?
Indeed.
It is.
Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 150,000 titles to choose from in every genre. Thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi. You know, there's autobiographies, a ton of stuff in there worth listening to. Audible titles play on an iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 devices for listening anytime, anywhere. And you, dear friend, can get a free audiobook by going to audibletrial.com/ratedNA. And we will give that book to you supporting Audible, for them supporting us. Yeah. No, we're giving it to them. It's our gift.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's our gift from Audible.
It's a win-win situation. So many wins.
You get to support the podcast, get a free book, and we will forever love you for it. So thank you to Audible and to you guys for supporting them and us.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
So, let's get down to business. So what did I do? I finished Assassin's Creed Liberation HD. So
nice.
I'm going to quickly sum up my thoughts about this game as sort of what it is in the greater compendium, if you will, of Assassin's Creed games, okay?
So what was Assassin's Creed Liberation Hot Dog like?
Hot Dog! See, I still like it.
That's what the HD stands for, right?
That is what HD stands for. Hot dog.
That's what I thought.
All right, so
when I watch stuff on Netflix, I'm always like, God damn it, it's not in hot dog.
It's not in hot dog. So
no,
this game,
Ash hates this joke. I'm amazed by this.
I think it's pretty good. I think
I don't even understand.
We've added a new a new term to the lexicon of this podcast, I think.
I'm just imagining an assassin, like, eagle diving with hot dogs in his hand.
Just, you know, a little sauerkraut, just going to town. You guys like sauerkraut on your hot dogs?
I don't.
Just talk about the games.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, the game, right. So I think that in the sort of the larger universe of Assassin's Creed and the different assassins that are portrayed in the games, I thought that Aveline was sort of one of the more fascinating characters in terms of her depth and the way that she approaches being an assassin with these different guises, if you will. You know, I described on the last podcast how she has the different disguises and
different outfits for different skill sets.
Yeah, they grant her different strengths and weaknesses and stuff like that. So I think all of that is great, and I would really like to see more of her in another game. I think it would be really awesome. That being said, the game as it is, sort of being a port of a portable game to a television console, is sort of hit and miss in places. And you can see that there are some noticeable bugs at times, as well as weird performance things, like things kind of, it's like that draw distance things where things will materialize into your viewpoint as you get closer to them.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And it's really off-putting. And then at times the game actually does this weird thing where it sort of fades to black as if it's loading something. It's really sudden. It's super quick too, but it does it enough in the game that it almost makes you think that the game is loading some kind of event that you need to address when that happens. And it's something that you've never seen in any other Assassin's Creed game. And it's really strange. Other than that, I think that this particular game sort of went out of its way to add collectibles to what should have otherwise been a pretty compact and tight quality Assassin's Creed experience. I think I was checking through my inventory at the end of the game and I ended up collecting, you know, like 10 pocket watches, 10 alligator eggs, 10 coins, 10 gems, 50 treasure chests. Like the list goes on and on. I read somewhere that they added something to this game that wasn't in the portable game. Out in the bayou, there are these people that are sick. They have like this swamp sickness or whatever, and you have to go and physically beat the crap out of them, and then you administer the medicine to them. And you're thinking like,
that's how things work in Florida, man. You just go into the swamp and you kick the shit out of people and you administer the medicine after you punch them in the face.
But like those kinds of activities were things that would make you lose your health in other games, your synchronization health, you know, like beating up civilians, you know, for whatever purpose, whether it was to administer medicine or just because you were frustrated. But anyways, there you go. I think if, you know, for anyone that's listening, I think that if you are an Assassin's Creed fan and you have played the other games, you should play this game. If you haven't played all of them, you might as well just play 4 instead, you know, Black Flag.
Yeah.
It's sort of a more detailed and enriched experience. I think this is, you know, for some of the more hardcore fans that just really want all of the content. Other than that, we've been playing some Battlefield 4. This past weekend was a double XP event. And we got into some shenanigans. You and I didn't play together, right, Ash, this week?
No, I ended up playing with Derek and Micah for a bit. I think Friday night, late? Friday night.
Oh, right, yeah.
After the incident.
I heard about that, what that session was like.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing. There was whiskey involved and... one of the people I was playing with, who I will not name, had like a kill death ratio. Not that I give a shit about KDR, but I think it was one kill and like 28 deaths or something. Like that. It was just hilarious.
It's like a Matt record, right?
It
there.
Was hilarious. It was amazing.
That's the whiskey unboost to the XP.
Exactly right. No, but it was still a lot of fun. It was awesome. Always fun with friends, you know.
Yeah, I played with D the P the next day, and we cleaned up. He showed me the value of being a patient Battlefield player. I tend to charge into battle, and if my vehicle's disabled, I jump out of it. And he's like, no, we can retreat from the battlefield and repair it, and we'll get back in the fight. And I'm like, I ain't got time for that.
He is pretty tactical.
Yeah, and then finally I started playing Sleeping Dogs, which was one of the free games with gold as part of that promotion on Xbox 360. It's a Square Enix game, sort of open world style like GTA, except the major game mechanic in Sleeping Dogs is beat 'em up style combat, like Street Fighter, like Double Dragon style fighting, you know, in a third person 3D environment. And that's really fun and satisfying. It's sort of a welcome change from just shooting at people, because there's combos involved and you can kind of strategize and chain together your moves and fight like a Ninja Turtle or something crazy like that. So that's
awesome.
Fun. Music's good in that game too, you guys. I don't know if you've had a chance to play it yet, but they have, you know, like many of these open world Steel Cars games, they have different radio stations, and
yeah,
this one has some good variety. There's like a Daptone Records radio station, which is awesome.
Really?
So they
that's
just play
cool.
like, yeah, they play like Menahan Street Band and, you know, what's the new
Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings.
Yeah, Sharon Jones. They play like some of her older stuff. And then there's a, what's Bonobo? Ninja Tune. There's a Ninja Tune radio station too. So it's all that down-tempo electronica stuff. So
it's cool.
It's really cool. If you are Xbox 360 member and you downloaded it and haven't started playing, I would recommend that as well. I'm about 5 hours in. So that's that. Matt,
cool.
Why don't you tell us what you've been up to?
Firing up BioShock still, playing through that, which is still an awesome experience. Played it on big screen mode yesterday.
Oh, you're playing on PC, right?
Yeah. So I threw it on my... I've got my laptop, and I threw that on the TV, and then, like, sat back with my wireless... My new mouse.
Ooh. Cool.
Which, Ash, work? Have you plugged in your new mouse yet?
Yeah, it's fucking... I had to turn the sensitivity down.
I was like, whoa! What is this? I killed the sensitivity in the Windows settings, and then I opened the game, and I killed it in the game, too. I was like, I can't handle this level. It was insane.
Way too precise for
usually there's some
hand.
Software, right? With those mices, the mises.
Did Razer didn't package anything. I'd probably have to go online and see.
Yeah,
I'd
probably have to download it.
But good lord, it is like... It was crazy. Like, you just barely move the mouse.
Ball. You got to take the ball out and take the fuzz ring off the ball.
For dating ourselves.
Fuzz ring off.
Yeah. This was pretty insane. So, but it was fun. I got a little further in that game. And that game is... The only weird thing about BioShock is that when you play it, like, in sessions, you know, like when you sit down for a few hours and play, when you sit back down, if you weren't, like, just playing the day or two beforehand, you get real disoriented as to where you were headed. You're like, I was headed down this hallway, I think, and I think I ended up like backtracking a little, and I eventually found my way and everything was fine. But the game is just, the atmosphere in that game, even though it shows its age, is still just awesome. I'm really, really enjoying it.
It's just right in that post System Shock 2 lineage.
Yeah.
So it's really it's got the best of both worlds, you know?
It actually makes me want to revisit Dead Space like now, like after the fact, replay Dead Space. And
don't forget that in Dead Space 1, you are super heavy and super slow, and that's the scary part about it.
Yeah. But I just mean that, like, the whole feel of the game made me want to revisit, like, that. You know what I mean? Like, play more of this team that broke into two great teams. So
it's so amazing that happened.
Did that. Ash and I went and saw a documentary about the Descendants, which was very good, called Filmage. I don't know if Ash is going to talk about it at all, but it's
no, I forgot that I saw it. No, it was great, but it's just been a crazy week. So
yeah, it was kind of like a wait in line. It was weird for us because we're old dudes, and like we got in line to see this movie, and like I started commenting, like, Scott, you would have laughed. It was old, you know, punk rock Orlando.
Oh yeah,
like convention essentially. Like I looked around, and I was like, "This looks like a show from like a 2002 show, you know, like at Toby's old place or something."
Yeah,
but it was pretty cool. The documentary is awesome. You know, the music, of course, is amazing still. So it was a cool experience overall. Should look for it when it comes out, called Filmage.
Great documentary, very funny.
Yeah, super funny.
A lot of humor. I mean, it's hard for documentaries to get laughs, especially if they're, you know, just music documentaries, but this was great. Dave Grohl is just a funny guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think the biggest laugh was Dave Grohl, who talks about them, and he basically, like, I won't tell the whole joke, but he makes a comment about how hard it is to go from a band that everybody loves, like a huge band that's, like, influential and everybody loves, to a second band, and, like... He makes a comment on it, and it's very funny how he delivers the joke, kind of like he knows what it's like, kind of thing, you know. So it was pretty cool, but that was good. Caught up on a lot of TV because I was gone for like a week and a half, so had to catch up on everything: Brooklyn Nine-Nine and Shield and Community and Parks and Recreation and all the wonderful friggin' TV that's on right now, which is, I think, pretty awesome. I know we don't talk about it a ton, but there are like a ton of really good shows on at the moment for some reason. S.H.I.E.L.D., and not to get deep into it, good.
It's heavy. Heavy, man.
It's heavy. They did a lot of things that everybody's been asking for, mentioned a lot of cool agencies, if you will, that everybody's been kind of wanting to see show up in the show. So hopefully they will show up.
Stuff with Sky was great.
Stuff with Sky was great. She's finally pointful. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It was weird because they kept dragging these storylines out, and it's finally like, oh, here's the storyline. And you're like, oh, you could have told us that 6 episodes ago.
Yeah.
You would have been totally fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
I read an article in AV Club about it, and they mentioned that they kind of wished, you know, that this was almost the pilot episode with like maybe a little bit more build up because it felt so action-y and was so like fun, and but yet had all these like story instead of like teasing these stories like in the kind of Joss Whedon way, they kind of like told you this is what the story is going to be, but then it pulled back so that you're still kind of guessing like what there's plenty of WTFs like what's going on kind of stuff, even though they told you, hey, here's where we're headed. So I thought that was all really great. It made up for me starting to slack on the show a little of like, oh God, how long are they going to drag this stuff out? So I'm excited. And then there's been some announcements that I think we did talk about, or we didn't, or it was going to be in the news and we didn't. And all good
this
stuff.
This interview went long, so we'll do the news next week with that.
Yeah.
S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff.
All good stuff. And we'll talk about it later. But yeah, I'm excited. Shows are good. BioShock, Filmage. That's Filmage. Been me. How about you, Ash?
Only thing really, I mean, other than going to see Filmage, I started playing Dead Rising 3, which I had picked up when I first got my Xbox One. So it's an Xbox One launch title. Most people know what the Dead Rising series is like. So I on Sunday morning played through, I don't know, maybe about 5 hours of it.
And you just put the disc in and started playing right away, right?
No, I actually started to download the night before because I heard that in order to play it, I was going to have to first do the install, which takes about 20 minutes, 25 minutes, something like that. And then there was a 13 gigabyte patch that I had to sit through in order to actually play the game. So a 13 gigabyte patch. That's the largest patch that ever. That is like, that's not even a fucking patch. That's
half a game.
It's like, yeah, seriously, it's ridiculous.
That's more but than anyway, a game on the 360.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be honest, I just started it when I went to bed. When I woke up, it was done. I don't know how long it took, but whatever.
You just downloaded Mass Effect 3.
Yeah. Seriously, kind of ridiculous. but the game's a lot of fun. I mean, it's totally over the top, ridiculous. It's not as comedic as the other Dead Rising games. The other ones were really slapsticky, super Japanese to the point where you're just like, what is going on in terms of the plot and such. This is it's streamlined a lot, and they definitely borrow a lot from a lot of the tropes of Western zombie films, meaning that it's not. It doesn't rely as heavily on like Japanese bizarro, like, you know, gore and humor. It's more, you know, Romero-esque.
Definitely to be polarized on this game, though. Where do you sort of fall in this?
Well, it's fun. So to me, that's the most important thing. I don't think it's a great game. Just simply because there is not a lot of plot going on.
Mm-hmm.
You do all these fun rescue missions with survivors, but in order to rescue a lot of the survivors, you have to do really terrible, mundane, like gathering quests and like fetch quests. So you'll find like a guy. Well, yeah, there are elements of that are super Japanese. So you'll find a guy who's on the roof and he's like, I won't come down until you find all my tarot cards. And you're like, what? And you have to go around the city and look for these cards, and then you give him the card, and he's like, all right, I'll join you, and then you have to take him to a safe house, like on the other side of the city. So there's a lot of quests like that that are just kind of arduous, and you're just like, oh, shit, like, why do I have to do this? But the gameplay itself is actually pretty fun. It's overly simple, though. I mean, you have a light attack, you have a heavy attack, you get a certain number of kills, and then you can do it like an execution move. I guess where the real fun in the game lies is creating weapons, and there are, honestly, I can't even explain how many weapons there are. This game is kind of known for letting you kill zombies with anything you want, from like a computer monitor to like a teddy bear. But now you can combine all sorts of just crazy shit to create the most ridiculous and fun weapons that you could possibly imagine, and then use them to, you know, level up your character and you know, go through the story. It's open world this time, but after playing like large open world games like, you know, GTA and stuff, it feels very constricted, very small. Because, you know, the GTA games are just like so open world that you're just like, they kind of spoil you, right? So this is a rather smaller city, but you can go anywhere and do almost anything. Different areas of the map unlock as you explore. The plot line's kind of bare bones. I mean, right now I'm just a dude and I'm trying to get out of the city. That's pretty much all I got. Oh, wow. and there's some stuff going on and some, you know, supporting characters that I've met so far. But in terms of the grand scheme of things right now, like the only thing I'm worried about is escaping, you know? So, but you know, I'm enjoying it. Like the music's good. It's stylized. It's fun. The gameplay is enjoyable. You know, there's something really satisfying getting like 100 kill streak of zombies, like, you know, in a row,
yeah.
Like 100. I'm not shitting you. When they say there's a lot of zombies on the screen, we're talking hundreds on the screen at the same time. So that's a technical feat in and of itself. I mean, it's like, you know, there's just zombies fucking everywhere. So, I mean, there's great moments where you'll like hop on the roof of a truck or something and you look down and there's just a sea of zombies beneath you. And you're like, well, what the fuck do I do to get out of this? So it's fun. I mean, it's definitely it's I can understand it's a launch title. Parts of it feel next gen. Parts of it don't feel next gen. Or I guess that's now current gen. I don't know. What should we call it these days?
Yeah.
Whatever. But anyway,
we get it.
Whatever you want. The gen. But anyway, I say if you are looking for something to play on your Xbox One, go for it. I mean, it's cool. It's different. Why not?
Let's be honest. You know, we're all just killing time until Titanfall comes out, right?
Yeah, that's kind of true too. Garden Warfare too, man.
Yeah, and South Park, Stick of Truth, if it ever comes out.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Yeah. But so that's pretty much it for me, guys. It's been a pretty week, but whatever. We'll live.
Yeah.
So let's go ahead and do our interview with Luis Hernandez from Necrophone Games for his game Jazz Punk from published by Adult Swim. And we'll be back with our nerd-appropriate question of the week.
Enjoy.
We're here with Luis Hernandez from Jazz Punk, Necrophone Games Jazz Punk. Thanks, man. Thanks for coming by. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. Thanks.
Did I get your name right? I saw you tweet it the other day. You're like, say my name correctly. I'm like, oh, shit, I better put this in the show notes. It's Luis. So, yeah, Luis, I did it.
Oh, man, I didn't actually think anyone paid attention to that.
I do. I always pay attention. Consummate professional here.
Awesome. Hoping other people follow your style there. Because, yeah, I don't know. I get some awful pronunciations. I'm doing – I like how you said from Jazz Punk. Like, it's like a nation state
from a world.
Or something. Yeah, I come to you as ambassador of Jazz Punk. I don't know. We're doing all right. We're just chugging away.
Yeah. So the game comes out on February 7th, which is sneaking up on us, and you guys have been working on it for a long time. Matt and myself met you at PAX Prime this year, and Sean Baptiste from Firehose Games pointed us in the direction of Jazz Punk and basically was spazzing out. This is the best way to put it.
Yeah.
And he's like, you have to go play it. And so we went down there and checked it out and fell in love with the game. And we've gotten a chance, of course, to play it a little bit more and still love the game. So we're excited to have you on. The first question is, if you were to describe this game. I know this is the hardest question.
This is the
of all the questions I have. This one's the stumper. Stumper? Is that a thing?
Sure.
Yeah,
it is now.
Okay, it is now. So this is the stumper. What the hell is Jazz Punk and why should people want to play this unique game?
Man, that's like you just buckshot me right in the face with a double barrel.
I'm sorry.
It's funny because that's the easiest for I think a lot of other developers. That's like the easiest question in the world. They're like, oh well, it's a puzzle platformer, and you puzzle your way through platforms. Like, and for us, it's really weird because we're kind of this like sort of this outlier weird. I don't know. I mean, I can give you the boilerplate answer. I mean, I say that to kind of everybody that asks. But then I can kind of give you a more like nuanced answer and you can pick apart. So, the back of the box thing for Jazz Punk is like Jazz Punk is a how do I say this a few different ways each time because I always have to say this. Jazz Punk is a cyberpunk comedy adventure game set in a retro futuristic world of spies and Cold War espionage and ridiculous infiltration missions. And and it takes place in this like very weird sort of alternate reality 1960s where computers have advanced a lot quicker than they have in our world. And you sort of play this like spy-esque character. And you basically break into, you know, corporations and stuff and try to steal their shit. and then sort of along the way, you know, there's a lot of you can stop and smell the roses. Do we have roses in the game? Yes, we have roses in the game. So figuratively speaking, yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of kind of extra stuff to sort of seek out and do. And I think that's really the that's always been my favorite part of games, and so that we kind of made that the focus of this game is the unnecessary kind of exploration aspect.
I mean, that's definitely after getting my hands on it again and getting to spend, you know, more time just in the first level exploring the courtyard and seeing all of the little strange things that there were to do. It just really I've never played a game any game like it because it is all about exploration, but at the same time, it's just so whimsical and bizarre that you honestly, like I talked to Scott just a minute ago about it. He's like, I felt like I was playing someone else's dream. And I was, and I was just experiencing someone else's memories that weren't mine. And it was really like, it was really off-putting, but cool at the same time. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, that's honestly the same vibe that I got. It's a very surreal experience in a very like David Lynch kind of way, you know?
Yes. If like if a friend were to describe their dream to me and then I were trying to picture what this dream looked like in my head, and then I played that as a game. That's kind of what it felt like to me. It was incredible, and I'm a fan of the retro futuristic aspect of it as well. So it's like scratches all the right itches for me for sure. But unfortunately, I did not get to meet you guys at PAX. But tell me, yeah, I know this is like these two guys came back and they're like, oh, dude, Jazz Punk, and I'm like, I didn't get to play it. Come on, and they're trying to explain to me what it is, and
they just sound like lunatics.
Yeah,
sure.
Like, yeah. And there's these spiders in a jar. What the fuck? Yeah.
And then I've found that the more I try to explain it to people, the longer time has passed since I've played it. I'm like, and then I was like hitting flies with a fly swatter because it was in the China shop. I'm like, I don't know. It just got weirder and weirder.
I was like a fairy princess, and they were trying to sell me to an orphanage, but nobody wanted me because I had a mustard stain on the corner of my shirt. And please believe me, I'm not having a nervous breakdown. Please believe me. Oh God, what's become of my life? Yeah, it's funny cause when people try to explain Jazz Punk. Either like I'll read a lot of articles or something where we send out a preview build of the game, and they have to kind of write about it. And different people seem to latch on to completely different aspects of the game, or some, you know, a lot of people will miss different things or play different things because they explored, you know, in their own way. But yeah, having people try to describe the game always, it's weird that you brought up the dream aspect because it actually does sound like somebody trying to describe their dreams. In both the sort of like fevered lunatic kind of way and also the sort of interesting surreal sort of way. Cause yeah, people will just come up with the weirdest things. They'll be like, oh man, it's like you were my grandpa, but you were also a lizard. And it's, you know, we were wandering through, I think it was my like elementary school, but it was a little bit, everything was like sideways and you're just like, what the hell are you talking about? And so, yeah, I don't know. The game kind of comes away like that. And I like that. That's. I mean, that was part of that was sort of one of the earliest things we wanted to do with the game was to kind of – I like that that sort of stream of consciousness thing. It's weird because some people will see it and they've never – not really familiar with comedy outside of you know, they're like 14 years old or something. I've never seen comedy outside of memes in the internet. And so they don't really understand the concept of a non sequitur. Mm-hmm. And they're not really familiar with the concept of surreal comedy and stream of consciousness comedy, which was like Monty Python, I think, was one of the really early,
absolutely
like huge pop culture phenomenon of that style. I mean, if you go back really far, you could like argue, I don't know, Alice in Wonderland or something,
sure,
kind of has that as well. But that humor and absurdity, and the humor from non sequiturs, and that's something that I've always like, I've loved that since I was a kid. I don't know, in Canada we got a lot of British comedy, like we have the CBC, which is like, they used to just take a lot of BBC content and and show it here. So I don't know. I grew up watching a lot of BBC comedy. I think maybe more than people in America would have got. I don't know, Alexei Sale. If you have any British listeners, they might know Alexei Sale. Mr. Bean exploded, but I remember back when that was just like this weird little. There's really short. They're like 6 minutes, and so they used to just kind of be bumpers. Like they would just sort of. Yeah, it would just be the short little bumper between shows, but this funny, weird little man who doesn't say anything. And yeah, no, I remember watching all these things as a kid, and like, and of course, like the, I'm sure you guys all watched all of the Naked Gun films and
of course, yeah,
Airplane
yeah.
and all it, and Hot Shots. Like nobody, it's so weird.
I love Hot Shots, man. Yeah. No, I really did. Great.
That stuff is like pure gold to me, but it's so weird how it completely disappeared from like public view. And even if you go to, there's not like there's Blockbusters anymore, but
right.
Back in the day, you'd go to the comedy section of a video store, and some stuff like that would tend to persist on the shelf like for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. And so you'd be like, oh, what the hell is this thing? And you'd pick up, you know, Hot Shots or Repo Man or some, you know, weird 80s comedy, mm-hmm. surreal comedy film. And these days, everything is just like Netflix. Like, it's almost like if Netflix isn't licensing it, or if you aren't already familiar with it from recommendation from somebody else, you're less likely to come across it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and yeah. I miss going to video stores and just browsing. We just talked about this the other day, actually. It used to be so fun to just pick up something completely random off, mm-hmm. off the Blockbuster shelf and being like, oh, like I just found a good movie on my own, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally. And I mean, it was also sort of a locality thing, too. So, you know, if you went to – I remember before Blockbuster, we used to go to this like this video store, this like family-owned video store. It was like owned by two old – it's like a old fat Greek guy and his really nice wife. And yeah, they just ran this video store, and it's like whatever random stuff that they bought from the distributor was like sitting in their comedy section. And I don't know. Yeah. So much of your childhood is just kind of, you're like, I don't know, this has a weird cover. I remember renting, What's Up Tiger Lily. Cause it had, like I had no idea. Right. But it had a cartoon-ish cover. And so when you're 8 years old, I'm just like, give me cartoons. I just want cartoons. Give me cartoons.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I picked up What's Up Tiger Lily, had no idea what it was, and rented it just because it had sort of a cartoon Woody Allen on the front.
Yeah. And I think I did the same thing with Wizards. Yeah. Like Ralph Bakshi's Wizards. And I'm like, this is about Nazis. And I'm like, what? Like, I learned about Nazis when I was like 7 from watching Wizards. God. You know,
that's really funny. Yeah, yeah, totally. And I mean, I think I remember watching that too as a kid. And it's like, I just got it because I thought it was a cartoon. But you're like, whoa, this is heavy, something psychedelic. Like, you know, when you're 8 years old and you're watching Wizards, you might as well just be high as a cat.
It might explain so much about.
But yeah, I don't know. So that whole era is kind of gone and behind us. But it definitely left a huge mark on. Jess is my programmer. I think you guys met him at PAX. But yeah. And so I don't know, when we were kind of piecing the game together, we realized like that was sort of our sense of humor and kind of where we came from. And also, I mean, I was crazy into Mad Magazine and like spoof comedy.
I still miss the full.
So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I was the same way. I would go 7-Eleven and grab a Mad, and I would always sneak and do the fold in and not buy it because it was too expensive. You know,
that's brutal. That's really brutal.
Who ruined the fold in.
Oh, no. Yeah, that was like an art form in and of itself. And I feel like Al Jaffe is the only guy who ever mastered that. I don't know if anyone else, like, I don't know. He like developed his own medium of like folding pictures in. And
they're gorgeous too. They're really nice.
Yeah, yeah. Those are really amazing. So I don't know. Yeah, that's kind of the area that jazz punk comes from. And it'll be sort of new, I think, to a lot of younger people who maybe are less familiar with that. And a lot of people who have seen the game and don't really have have spoof comedy as a frame of reference. Really, I think they like it, and I think they get it in a different way. They're kind of like, oh, it's sort of like if Lolcats was a game. Or, I don't know. They don't. It's like they actually don't know the word comedy. Like it's not in their lexicon.
Yeah, it's
strange. They're just like, oh, it's kind of like it's kind of like that socially awkward penguin. But it's a game or something. I'm like, okay, if that's I know that's probably.
No, I see what you're saying, though. Like we're basically like infected by internet culture, you know, and it's kind of strange. Yeah,
well, it's pretty interesting though, because when we left the interview with you guys and I was explaining this game to other people, every time the thing I would say is like it's like an actual comedy game. Like this isn't or a game based in real comedy and humor. It's not like internet humor. I kept saying that to everybody. I was like, it's not an internet humor game. Like this is like it has real jokes in it. Like they're well formed. Everything's done like correctly, you know.
I mean, I appreciate that. That's something we did intentionally. I think it would have been really easy to just like, you know, sort of cut out pictures of cats out of magazines, scan them and be like, lol, something. So yeah, like the game actually doesn't contain, it's weird. It contains, does contain a lot of technological humor,
mm-hmm.
right? But more from a like cyberpunk or like engineer perspective. A lot of engineers out there are going to like spray milk out of their nose. Just we just threw in, I mean, Jess and I come from a background of doing, we met as electronics contractors. Like that was our job before. So there's a lot of like just ridiculous tech humor. It's totally hidden in there. And like, no one else will notice it. Like it'll just sort of be like, It'll completely blend into the background, and I think most people will just pass by. But somebody's going to walk past, you know, a mailbox or something and be like, oh, my God, like, you know, 41, IN4148, that's a small signal diode. they'll get that. And, like, no one else will notice or care or think about it. But there's all these, like, it's like a layer cake. And so we're hoping that there's kind of enough variety of humor that, you know, people can get their whatever Atari 2600 jokes. Mm-hmm. People can get their, Zucker Abrams Zucker movie jokes. People can get their like different mid-century modernist, I don't know, architecture jokes, whatever. It's a grab bag. So hopefully that kind of works in our favor. Go ahead.
I was going to say for the listeners that are not already familiar, can you talk a little bit about the team as it is and sort of how you divide up the work between the two?
Okay. So I am the I'm more like the art side of things, and Jess is he does all the programming. Mm-hmm. We kind of co-write a lot of stuff. Like we'll have writing meetings together and bounce stuff off of each other. But yeah, I do all of the, like I build all of the levels. I do all of the modeling. I do all of the 2D art. I do all the music. I do a lot of the sound effects, like voice effects, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Jess does a lot of like he does all the programming. Animation is like mostly him as well. Just all of the tech back end. And it tends to work pretty well, and like we've both done, and we can kind of do each other's jobs, but we don't really want to,
right?
But it's really useful anyway, because it's like I've done programming, and Jess can do art, but we've kind of picked the thing that we really like to do. But it means that I'm able to do stuff, and I can keep in the back of my head all of this sort of technical constraints that he'll have to deal with.
Right.
I'm not completely, I mean, sometimes you get game artists and stuff out there who have never, you know, programmed a line of code in their life. And so they don't really take into account when they're handing it off to somebody else, they don't really take into account to like cross their T's and dot their I's kind of thing. They're just sort of like, right, here, you do it. And then the guy's like, oh, you didn't give this to me properly at all. And I'm going to have to spend the next 6 hours like fixing it so that it'll work in the game. And luckily we're very aware of what one another kind of has to cope with.
Right.
And so it's good. It results in a lot of, it results in very little like toe stepping on and like kind of, you know, I don't know. It's a really good dynamic, I find.
That's cool.
I remember when we were at PAX, we talked a bunch about, we were talking first about kind of the comedy aspect of the game, and you were saying that it didn't actually initially start out maybe strictly as a comedy game. You guys actually were kind of trying to make a serious sort of spoofy spy game, but not necessarily like as, you know, I mean, not insane is the wrong word, but as like kind of, you know, ludicrous at points.
It was even more so than that. It started like the initial inception of the game was really more of a sort of, I guess I would describe it as like kind of a straightforward. There's a lot of these out there, and they all kind of derive from Portal. But it was more of a sort of a straightforward, kind of serious first-person puzzle type game. It's sort of set in this like noir, kind of heavy stylized noir world. And so, yeah, it would have been a lot more like puzzle type. Like the levels would have been sort of designed around like a puzzle or something.
Right.
And it would have had like a core mechanic thing that you're really focused on doing, and in many ways, yeah, it would have just been another one of these games that kind of like,
so still infiltrating the consulate, but with no pigeon poop and stuff.
No, even that would have probably been toned down so much because it was less of this. It even had less of a narrative, and it was really more focused on this, like, you know, I mean, this was back in 2007, so Braid and Portal came out, and I think that really sort of sent a shockwave through the indie world, because everyone was like, oh my God, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to make a game focused on this like one, you know, mind bending core mechanic. And like, right. So, I mean, I was crazy. That hit me just as badly as I think it hit everybody else. And it took me a long while for that to kind of wear off and sort of realized, like, not only is that not something I want to make, but, it's not, I don't know, that's actually less interesting to me as time has gone on. It's still a valid area of like exploration for indies to do if that's really your sort of thing, but it almost feels like a disingenuous approach for me if that's something I want. You know, I'm going to invest like a considerable amount of, I don't know, it almost kind of like wears me out now when I see a new indie game announced and like, oh man, this game is like, but you don't understand. You can invert gravity. Whoa.
Right.
You don't understand. Like, this whole game is like light, but like light and dark. And you can like, subvert your expectations of like time and space. And it's like, I don't know.
But is it fun? That's the whole thing.
Well, yeah. It's also just sort of like, okay, so I know the whole game is going to be me going from like room to room, whatever you're like, what was that one? Quantum Conundrum or something.
Yeah. Yes.
And I don't know, there was no, like, I just didn't care. Like, I was trying to play it, and I was like,
because the hook becomes the mechanic, essentially. There is no, there's nothing else.
Yeah, like, the whole game is just some mechanics, so I'm like, okay, so I realize I'm going to go from room to room in this mansion for the next 10 hours or something, 4 hours, whatever, and you know, there's going to be different versions of using this mechanic, and, like, that is a, I guess that as a packaging became sort of dull to me. Because I felt like everybody started doing that all of a sudden.
Right.
And sort of like, I know what it's like when you learn about Shakespeare or something in English 101 and you're like, oh, okay, beginning, middle, end. Like, you sort of know the how screenwriters like write their movies and you're kind of like, oh, okay, well, these are going to be the parts of the game already. You can kind of see the skeleton before you've really like begun. And then that's really uninteresting to me because it's like, where's the surprise in there, right?
Whereas you want people to discover and then have I do have a question, though. So do you remember what the first joke was that got snuck into the game was and who did it or no?
I'm trying to think what there's one in the I don't know. Here's the thing is, like, I'm trying to avoid spoiling any jokes for the game. I know I can say one of the earlier ones was I think the first thing you do when you go in the sushi restaurant, I don't know if you guys played that level.
Yeah.
So I won't say what that is, but anyone who plays the game in a couple of weeks, I think that was one of the earliest ones. And a lot of the jokes in the game are me, like, we'll do writing meetings. And often the way it works is like, we start at a reasonable hour. And, you know, there's the sun is out and so on. Mm-hmm. And then as time goes on and we've kind of like worn each other down, trying to write for the game, often what would happen is it would just be really late, and you know, we ordered pizza or something, and we'd be kind of like tired and full of pizza.
I know where this is going with the pizza.
And then really, and then what'll often happen is like we'll just start making like more and more sort of. It you kind of cross that threshold where your inhibitions are down, and you'll just start saying like the stupidest ideas because yeah. You don't care anymore, almost, right? Like you sort of initially you're like, you know, you got all your files and stuff in order, and you're like, okay, like writing meeting, you know, begins now, like comedy starts now. And then by the end of the night, you're just like fucking, I don't know, you throw an enchilada at the guy's head. And then if that gets a laugh out of either, like if I say that and I'm able to get a laugh, usually that stuff ends up being the best stuff.
Yeah.
And that ended up being kind of how a lot of things. So yeah, there's a lot of jokes in the game that I said them. This is weird to say. I said them as a joke. Like I wasn't expecting that to be the real solution to the problem, but
I'm thinking of a lot of the puzzles right now. And it's just making me laugh.
They'll often be so unexpected. And sort of intentionally so, because I would have said them in the writing meeting to catch like Jess off guard or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're sort of so out of left field. And I don't know, that's the kind of humor that I like. So that if I can surprise him with something, or if he can surprise me with something, that ends up kind of being our favorite. We'll kind of look down the list, and that'll end up being kind of our favorite one. It's the one that really came out of nowhere, but still sort of fits in a sort of hard to describe kind of way. Like the game makes perfect sense to me, but in a way that is hard to describe. Again, sort of like a dream or something where you sort of have, you develop your own internal logic for a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And to me, the game isn't this like mishmash of completely disparate stuff. Like it, the flow of it makes perfect sense to me, but it sort of depends from the angle that you come at it. And of course people are going to bring their own weird experiences to, they're like, oh, is this a reference to this? And I was like, sure. Yes.
Yeah.
Speaking of weird experiences, I told the guys this right before you got on. I don't think this is much of a spoiler, but there's a part where you can go into a movie theater and there's essentially just a trailer for an old children's toy called the Swing Wing. Is that what it was called? The Swing Wing?
I think it's Swing Wing. It might be Swing Thing.
Swing Thing?
I think it might actually be. No, maybe it is Swing Wing.
It freaked me out because the main girl in the Swing Wing commercial is identical to my mom when my mom was that age. So imagine my terror. Yeah. What if it's everyone's moms? Oh my God.
Well, that's a bit of what we do is we have some internal like webcam capture technology. So we capture your face. We run it in, we have it hooked up to ancestry.com. We do a find and search for your closest living relative. And then we sort of like geo map their face coordinates
and de-age them.
Yeah,
this is incredible technology.
It's mind blowing, and I think almost everyone who's played that part of the game gets a seizure.
Is this what the first 5 years of the game development?
Yeah, that oh my that god, part the of license, just the licensing technology for that alone was just.
I really
insane.
Feel like you're bearing the lead here. You know, we finally just now got to the core game technology.
De-aging people's moms.
Oh yeah.
I have to first of all applaud the music, which I understand that you created. I absolutely fucking love it. How do you write music? I mean, how do you go about actually creating music how did you go about creating music for Jazz Punk?
You're talking about just the music as you walk around the game?
Yeah, just the general background music.
Yeah, I don't know. The music thing is going to be really interesting to me because I'm hoping it's very unlike a lot of other game music out there. The process by which I make it is pretty ridiculous. I made a blog post about this a couple years back, but so I build, like I mentioned, I did a lot of like electronics design and stuff kind of before I got into games like hardcore. So I build all of my synthesizers. Like I build a lot of I build analog synthesizers, analog sequencers, effects, all that stuff. So I have the little like electronic kind of music studio set up in my I'm looking at it right now. It's in my room. So I use a huge, like, part of it was for me, it was really important because the game takes place in a kind of cyberpunk 1960s. It was really important for me for the music technology to kind of be locked into that era. Mm-hmm. So I very intentionally didn't want to use kind of modern computers for the music. Like I don't compose in like Logic or Max MSP right. or something, which I think is really the norm for almost every studio on the planet. Most people aren't really into the vintage synthesizer thing. Like almost every studio out there will compose digitally, and maybe they'll use analog sample banks or something, but right. I'm going to kind of get a little bit nerdy about this now.
There is a theremin shop in the game.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, exactly. So yeah, I've built theremins. I've built all that crap.
That's awesome.
I'm trying to think if I actually use any theremin. I think there is a little bit of theremin in the game somewhere, but yeah, I don't know. That history is really fascinating to me, and that history is actually very, very much linked with the history of electronic computers as well. Like, back 60 years ago, a synthesizer and a computer basically were using the same vacuum tubes. So those histories are very much linked to each
cool.
other.
I had no idea.
I don't know. I mean, I got really into building tube. Vacuum tube electronics as well. And so I've built like really weird circuits where it's like a noise generator that was used for analog computers to it's like a white noise generator that would be used to simulate like turbulence mm-hmm. in an analog computer system that's like simulating like a wind tunnel or like mm-hmm. turbulence against a ballistics trajectory or something. But you can go and build, you can dig that circuit out of an old book of schematics. You can dig that circuit out, build it, hook it up to an amplifier, and it sounds like a windstorm or something.
That's incredible. That's so
like,
cool.
Just really weird things like that. So I got really into doing stuff like that, and I've got all of these crazy vacuum tube electronics and old like 1960s synthesizers. I'm really into like British synthesizers from the 60s, Tape Echo, Spring Reverb, like all that stuff that that kind of gives sci-fi movies and sort of spy films from that era that really particular sound. Like James Bond gets catapulted out of like some laser beam or something. It's like watch it. I'll have like all these crazy weird sound effects that you don't really hear anymore, but like also a lot of the voices in the game, I'll sort of treat them the same way, and I'll try to use I'll use a lot of like vocoding, I'll use a lot of ring modulation, because that's like that sound of a Cylon or a Dalek mm-hmm. or any kind of classic science fiction character, like they were using the sorts of processors and stuff on them. So a lot of my style is I'll sample a lot of old records for various like pieces of percussion or things like that. I really like to sample like old jazz records and old Exotica records.
Oh, cool.
And then I'll kind of piece up I'll sort of build my own sample bank out of that, and then I'll kind of piece that together. It's really baroque. It takes a long time to do, but I'm basically kind of building an electromechanical rhythm section, or like an electromechanical like drum section, and I'll hook that up, and then I'll hook that up to an analog sequencer, and I kind of have I sort of have a few of those hooked up to each other, and then I can sort of start building together a composition out of that. And I program it with patch pins. Like I actually like put pins in a patch matrix and
wow.
That's ridiculous. That's awesome.
It's really, really it probably looks insane to somebody who makes music on a laptop. I think anyone who's seen that system up and running tends to kind of be overwhelmed by it, because they're not really used to that many.
Why would you go to such lengths? You're like, well, nothing else sounds like this, though. I mean, nothing, it totally makes sense.
I really wanted to have like that
Well, I'm glad I noticed it then.
Yeah, like
it sounds really cool. I really like it.
I want it to be Baroque because I think that matches the style of the game, where computers are kind of overwrought and like sort of overly complicated.
Oh, there's such a
right.
There's a joke there somewhere. It's not Baroque. Sorry, we turned on our no pun generator before that.
dun,
That's really. Yeah, I mean, that's super awesome though, because you actually do have two sort of analog music nerds in the room with Scott and I.
Oh, really?
Awesome. Yeah, we played a bunch, and you're a Moog dude, correct?
Correct.
What are you?
I have a theremin and an Opus and a Prodigy.
Oh, you got an Opus. You know, how is the filter on that Prodigy? Like, how much do you like that Prodigy?
I love the Prodigy, and while I don't really understand completely how the technology works, I kind of approach it from a perspective of not exactly knowing the technical aspects of it, but I know that when I turn a dial or, you know, switch a switch, it changes the tone in a certain way.
Right.
So, like, in my mind, I understand what I'm doing, but I couldn't explain it, you know? Like, I just kind of know how to use it just from messing around with it.
Well, you started out like I think everyone who gets that kind of keyboard does, with a lot of like wee wee, like high pitch, yeah, like leady kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And then over the years, you started using that thing for so much more atmosphere and like depth to music than I think it's maybe a claim to be in general from the 80s.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of started playing it like the anniversary or Get Up Kids or something, and then we realized that it produced a pretty good bass tone too, and you can really get good low end sound out of it and make a bunch of noise and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's sort of what the Prodigy and stuff were I think mainly designed for, is the really good bass generators. Yeah, I'm really into if you guys know the EMS synthesizers, do you know those? Like,
EMS.
EMS, VCS3 and Cynthia. They have a really particular look to them, and they have a little patch matrix, and that's how you program them. They don't use patch cables. But mm-hmm. I've built a couple of those, and those are that's kind of my like holy grail synth.
That is awesome.
But yeah, I mean, that sort of stuff was really important to me to get in there. Cause again, it's like, I don't know, I feel like because games, you know, didn't exist really before like 69, 71, and because they didn't really have proper sound until probably the 80s, and again, that was locked to like chip based generation. Absolutely. Sound, right? They don't actually have a rich history of, and then, you know, by the time you get to the 90s, whatever, PlayStation CD based systems could have fully sampled like CD music on them, But at that point in the 90s, all the music is just being made on like digital workstations and shit. So they don't have this rich history of analog studio music that movies have. Like if you go back and watch a movie from the 60s and like crank your volume up, you can hear the tape hiss of that soundtrack being recorded. Like that soundtrack was spliced together and recorded by somebody in a studio somewhere, and it was all those instruments were real at one point. You know what I mean? Like,
they
all that music really existed in real physical space somewhere at some point. And these days, even these days, it's like if you whatever play Crysis or Battlefield or whatever, most of that stuff is being generated by, you know, orchestral sample banks on some guy's digital workstation. Like, it doesn't have any. It doesn't have any, like, it's not like tactile to me. Yeah. And so I really wanted to make a game for a long time that sounded like the soundtrack sounded like it could have come from a completely different era. And again, not just by purchasing, like, I don't know, you can play Bioshock or something, but they just purchased a bunch of old music from some music licensing warehouse and threw it in their game. And that's a different thing too. Like Fallout does that, but Fallout just bought a bunch of music and had it.
There's something really special about the analog sound and how, you know, it's imperfect and it shouldn't be perfect. It's supposed to kind of have its own has its own biology to it. And I think that's what makes it really special.
I think it just, it pops out, and it's definitely different. I think what people are used to hearing in games where, again, it is very, it's very sterile. Like, I don't know, you can play a lot of games and it's like, it's just a tracker, you know, moving samples around, And like that can be kind of cool and interesting in its own way, but it sort of sucks when that's all you've got, really got for the past 30 years.
Yeah.
And if you can move away from that, and every now and then I'll see a game that does it. Like I think Kentucky Route Zero is a game I have a lot of respect for. I met the composer for that, and he's a really cool guy, and he's sort of doing the same thing I'm doing, where he's playing with, you know, real instruments and real analog synthesizers, and he's mixing Foley and sort of sounds he's generating, you know, with just random things he has around him. And he's really sort of, I don't know, I'm really influenced by like Musique Concrète. So that's kind of early French electroacoustic music, tape music. And like a lot of that was taking natural sounds and then modifying them with analog effects. And so it's like, you know, recording whatever, a boiling pot of water or something, and then putting that on tape, and then like cutting the tape up and running the tape at different speeds and getting all these like different artifacts and stuff out of it.
I was going to say, were you able to do any Foley for this game?
Oh yeah. Yeah. There's a ton of Foley.
Yeah. I was going to say, it sounds like it was all, you know, all kind of done live in some cases.
I wish there was a way to. I would love to make a game that's like live Foley'd.
Oh yeah, that would be even better.
It would be an installation somewhere. Obviously, there's no like, I'll come to your house and like possibly end together. But yeah, there's a ton of stuff in there. Like I don't know, there's one point where you're like sliding down a trash chute, and that was me. I'm like stapled sandpaper to like two wooden blocks and like scraped the sandpaper blocks together for like this like sort of sound. Cool. Like so cool. There's a million of those, right? Like,
yeah.
And then of course I'll do stuff where I'll make a lot of the sounds in the game are a mixture of like, again, in the Musique Concrète style, it's like it's a mixture of a natural sound, and then I'm running it through, you know, a reverb or a ring modulator or something to like give it a kind of metallic, a metallic sound or a spacey sound or something. Yeah. So yeah, if you talk to somebody in that game and their voice is like kind of reverby, that's like a real spring reverb. I don't, you know, nobody cares, but to me, that's interesting.
I think people will notice the, you know, your passion, because all the reviews I've read so far, you know, from the big sites, they've all kind of sung the praises of this game already, because they can feel that it's something different, and different right now is important, because like you were saying earlier, there are so many things that are, a lot of things feel very samey right now, you know, and different is incredibly important. This kind of segues into the trailer that you guys just put out, which was fucking great. did you have any direct involvement with that, or was that like Adult Swim coming to you with an idea, or how did that come to be?
Oh, yeah, we had a ton of involvement with that. Thankfully, initially we weren't sure. We kind of assumed we would have very little to do with that, actually.
Uh-huh.
But it ended up being like, that trailer is a trailer that I pitched that. Like I had to write and pitch that to them.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that was harrowing.
I bet.
I wrote a few different, like, I wrote drafts for a few different trailers, because Jess and I kind of knew in our head like some of like, kind of what we wanted, and we kind of had a wish list in our head of like, you know, what could we do if we could actually, you know, sky's the limit, like what can you do? Not that the sky was the limit, but you sort of try not to think in a box. It's very easy to kind of pre-limit yourself. So, yeah, I don't know. I wrote up drafts for like a few different things, and a lot of them were different parodies of things, or like other takes perhaps on cyberpunk stuff. But we knew we wanted like a sort of a cyberpunk trailer, and the most important thing is we knew we wanted it to be funny. So I remember writing that and pitching that, like, you know, over the phone, and just being, it's just like, that's just terrifying. And I think it was met with silence. It was met with like silence, and then it was like good silence. It was like, oh, that's like they're covering their mouths, or like they're laughing or something. So that was a fast and quick roller coaster. Like that thing hasn't been in the works for like 2 years or something. Like that was something that That was pitched back in like October. Yeah, that was a really quick turnaround time. But yeah, I mean, the team, Don Thacker is the director for that. His team, Imagos Films, they put that together really quickly, and they were really cool. Like, you know, he would consult with me about things, and he'd be like, oh, like, what do you think about the, you know, like, what are your thoughts on like what the room should be and stuff? So it's like, I don't know. It was amazing because I was able to like suggest, like, the room is based off of, if you guys know that, probably not. There's in Tokyo, there's a place called the Nagakin Capsule Tower. And it's like a 1960s, like, metabolist piece of architecture by Kishoki Urakawa. It's like one of my favorite buildings in the world. But it was basically this like 1960s like apartment where all of the apartments are like modularly connected to like this main trunk of the building. And so the idea was that if you're like a salary man, a crane, let's say you work for like Sony, and you work for Sony Osaka, but then you get promoted and you get promoted to like Sony in Tokyo or something. Uh-huh. So the idea was that a crane could just come and like pluck your apartment out of the side of a building, you know. And it was, and the buildings themselves, or the apartments themselves were kind of, they were specifically made to be the same size as like a standard like shipping crate.
Oh, geez.
So the idea was that it could be plucked out, put onto a truck or a train or whatever that's already pre-designed to hold that size object, and then just shipped across the country, and then just plugged into another apartment building somewhere. It was like this really modular concept for living. Never took off, but anyway. So I mean, yeah, the apartment that he's in is that apartment and stuff like that. Like, just
that's
crazy.
Really cool.
Really crazy, like, details that to me are just like, no way. But
so Adult Swim seems to have given you guys a lot of freedom, because you said the game's been in development for a while. How did you guys get hooked up with them? Because they seem to be, from an outsider's perspective, dealing with them just as like a podcast / you know, bunch of journalists, they seem really nice and really open. So it seems like a good fit. So how did that come to be?
That came to be, that was over a year ago. We had released our very first teaser trailer, and that had gotten, not a ton of attention, but I think more than maybe we were used to, because we'd just been working on the game in total obscurity for like 4 or 5 years at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was just a secret pet project, and, you know, even our kind of friends and family, like, didn't really know about it.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the way I kind of like to work. I don't really like to show people things until they're I don't like to show people things until they're done. And even in this case, I'm sort of like, I don't really like people to see Jazz Punk kind of half done. But I kind of realize it's like a reality of the situation. But yeah, I don't really like announcing prototypes to people and like, oh yeah, I'm working on this like cool unfinished thing. Like, come critique it. It's just not how I work. And I work really nicely kind of in silence. So I didn't tell a lot of people I was working on a game, just because I don't like that. It's sort of like the weather conversation, like in the elevator. It's like, I don't really like people when they have nothing to say, kind of like leaning in and being like, so how's the game coming along? Yeah. And when that's kind of all anybody knows about what you've been up to lately, it just kind of gets tiring. So yeah, we'd kind of worked on the game sort of secretly for a long time, and released this trailer. And Steve, the guy who got in touch with us from Adult Swim, yeah, he saw the trailer and he really seemed to like it. And that's when we kind of first started talking to them. And it's been really good. Like, I'm not just saying that as like in like a shill kind of
way.
Like, they've been really cool to work with. Really, what would the word be? Really like human to deal with. Like, like dealing with
that's
this
refreshing.
Like, it's not dealing with this like big, scary, you know,
entity.
Corporation. Yeah, it's not this big faceless entity. Like, it's pretty direct, and really, I'm only in communication with like handful of people. Like, it's not like I have to deal with this like team board of directors or something. Or
like
show us. Like, I don't have to go into a boardroom with like a clipboard and like a extendable, you know, pointy thingy, and like point at like graphs and charts and be like, well, you know, 45% through the game, our laugh ratio goes up, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, it's not this really dry thing. It's really human. I've been dealing with them. And also, I think if I think they're one of the only publishers out there that would even remotely feel like any kind of a fit for jazz punk. Because jazz punk is this really stylized, like, surreal, weird comedy thing. And Adult Swim is like one of the only, if not the only, sort of company out there doing that kind of stuff, at least in the TV
space.
Kind of
true. No, it's very true.
Like, and I actually like and watch their shit. Like, I, you know, yeah. I used to watch Choco Teen Hunger Force like crazy. I'd watch C-Lab 2021. I remember seeing Space Ghost back in the 90s.
And of course. Yeah.
Fuck, like, this thing is nuts. And well,
it must be cool to be part of that now, you know. That's got to feel nice.
Well, sort of. I mean, we're dealing with their games division, so that's it's not like I go get to party with the Aqua Teen Hunger Force. I think the TV people are in a different they're like in the, you know, they're the cool kids in the lunchroom. Like, that's a different thing. I haven't,
their games division's relatively young, right? I mean, they've done some mobile titles for a little while, but they haven't done you guys aren't the first computer game they're doing, right?
No, they did Volgar the Viking.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, they've been publishing stuff. We're kind of like we're sort of the first batch of like real official, like not just web mobile stuff, but like actual Steam games that I don't want to say like a legitimate thing, but definitely a bigger thing, like definitely a much bigger sort of risk and maybe a bigger investment. You know, getting your game on Steam is no mean feat. And so, you know, it's not like we just, it wasn't just like, oh, we'll just go on Steam, like, la, and like float there.
Yeah,
you know,
from what we hear, it is a huge challenge.
Yeah, it's a big thing. You have to like actually meet with Valve and go through a lot of, I don't know, there's a little boring stuff involved in that. So, we're kind of the first batch of that. And I think Jazz Punk is probably one of the biggest, if not the biggest, games that they've published so far, just in terms of being like a full 3D interactive, like, you know, not just something that's like a small, not to say the other games aren't like big, like long games or something, but I think to a lot of people, like 3D really pops out in I guess that's almost a joke, but yeah, 3D really pops out to people.
Almost a pun.
Like it lives in another dimension.
Yeah, it's coming out at you. It's definitely, I guess, a new thing. That's something I don't think that they've published before. I can't think of any other 3D games that they've worked on. So that's definitely a new thing for them. Yeah. And it kind of pops out a little bit in their portfolio.
They chose wisely. I mean, we just saw that you're in the I can't speak today. Sorry. The Indie Games Festival, you guys are in the running for the Game of the Year, right?
Yes.
So it's like you and Don't Starve and Papers, Please and Stanley Parable. And
yeah,
and that is fucking good company right there.
That is terrifying.
That's going to feel great, though. I mean, to work this long and this hard and then be put, you know, sort of on a pedestal. So people, I mean, that's going to raise exposure to you guys a whole lot.
That aspect is, I think that's really the best part of it is, yeah, it definitely helps our exposure. And in some cases, it just feels good because it sort of hopefully to some people that reads as we're not just this like – hopefully that reads to people that maybe we are doing something a little bit more unique and interesting than just like putting some dumb jokes in a game or something, right? Like I feel like sometimes people maybe – without playing our game obviously because it's not out yet. A lot of people see it and they're like, oh, okay. Again, they're not – their experience of comedy and games has been largely kind of poor. And that's also sort of terrifying for us too, because we don't necessarily have the best ambassadors out there for our genre. Right. So a lot of people who've been let down by comedy and games before sort of see it and they're like, oh, okay, you know, it's a first person shooter with some like dumb jokes in it or something. And it's like, hopefully the IGF nod, that's sort of how I think of it. Hopefully that IGF nod, shows a little bit of legitimacy just in terms of, we're trying to explore like kind of a new area. And it's sort of hard to articulate that without actually showing you the game just because it is the whole thing. It's interactive comedy. And that's a, that's a tricky thing, and that doesn't work on TV, and that doesn't work as a stand-up act. You know, I mean, I guess there's, I don't know, there's probably stand-up acts where they like get you on stage or some shit, but that's different,
right?
And so yeah, this whole thing that we've got kind of packaged up here is a weird thing. And so no, that IGF thing, that definitely raised our spirits a little bit.
I bet. That's incredible.
I know this is like a weird question to ask 2 weeks out from release, because obviously you're probably very focused on that right now. But I hear all the passion about music and about writing and comedy and all this. Do you guys see aspirations outside of games with this stuff? Do you see maybe making Jazz Punk sort of like the Naked Gun, and you do a whole series of you know, true interactive comedy? Like what do you see kind of in your crystal ball of the future for you guys? Because this is like a pretty awesome opening statement, you know, like, not to like, you know, let's make out later, but you know what I mean? Like just saying that, like, yes, it is awesome. Please. It's done very well. So like, what do you guys see kind of as the next steps for you after this?
A lot of it,
resting for a few minutes.
I mean, I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to take a little cat nap. It's done. This is basically our first game. You know, we've worked on little tiny, like, prototypes and smaller little things. But yeah, this is by and large our first game and the kind of our ambassadorship of who we are and kind of what we make. But that's the thing, is Jess and I come from the sort of like mixed media kind of art background, and you know, I make like noise music and like weird electronics and stuff. And very much the same way, like Jess makes robotics and tech prototypes, and you know, he likes to play guitar and stuff. So I don't know, we have a lot of like mixed interests, and so Jazz Punk is in many ways like sort of an excuse for us to, because Jazz Punk isn't just one thing the whole time. It actually allows us to do. It's almost like a way for us to make many games under the umbrella of one game, and that keeps us really interested in it. And I think if it were just one core mechanic for, you know, if you're just doing one core mechanic for like 2-3 hours straight, that probably would have lost our interest a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not opposed to making more Jazz Punk in the future, and I want to look into I'm not
I think if you put Jazz Punk like in the Oculus, your brain would actually explode. So don't do that to us, please.
we've done that. Actually.
Did you really?
We have a dev kit for it, and we've hooked it up.
Did your mind melt?
It's a mixture of two things. Like the Oculus prototype, the first Kickstarter prototype, is pretty poor. Like the resolution is pretty poor, and the it makes me nauseous.
Yeah, it does that to a lot of people.
Yeah, and I mean, that's really, I don't think that's a fault of VR. That really is just a lot of the problems with the prototype. Like, it doesn't have head tracking, and the resolution is low, and so on and so forth. Like, a lot of that stuff is being fixed as we speak. Mm-hmm. Walking around in Jazz Punk, that's the other thing, too, is the game wasn't designed for it, and so it would take a lot of... you'd have to retroactively go back and reprogram whole parts of the game to work in 3D because of how the systems and stuff are set up. Like, they're not intended to work with two cameras and so on. So that's a lot of manual labor. So yeah, I mean, it would be awesome to just like launch with Oculus support, but it's not even like people have them. So
yeah, exactly.
It's like when it becomes more of a, like an actual consumer product thing, it's more like something we'll look at. But walking around in that world with real full 3D was that's something that upped the dream aspect. Like,
oh, I bet.
Sure, yeah.
That is one of the weirdest. It's probably one of the weirdest experiences in my entire life.
I bet.
Because I can't really describe what it's like to build a world. Like, I built, you know, I build that world, and then I've kind of had that world for years. Like, I'm sort of used to it. And then it's sort of like in movies or something where, like, oh, like, I'll shrink you down and we can go play in your, you know, dollhouse or something. You know, some wizard or something pops up. He's like, oh, well, with a wave of my wand, we are now in your Lego playset. Yeah. And they're like, wow, I'm in the Lego world, like me, shrunk down and we're all Lego size. He's like, it's magic. Ugh. Like, it basically like that.
Because, I'm trapped inside of my own video game.
Yeah, it was like I somehow – it wasn't like I – you know, it wasn't like I was playing jazz punk. It's like I – you know, fucking passed out in the desert and like woke up in jazz punk and started walking around and like walking up to people and looking and walking up to objects. And the biggest thing was the scale. This is something that isn't really conveyed in articles about VR and discussions about VR, because they always just sort of talk about it in blanket terms. They're like, oh, immersion. Yeah. Awesome. Shoot guy. But when you – the architecture takes on weight when you are in a 3D space. Like this, your brain determines density and scale and largely based off of – or sorry, your brain attributes density and weight to scale. So when you walk up to a building and you actually have to crane your neck backwards to look up at the building, if it's a big building, something in the back of your brain goes, oh, that's like heavy. Mm-hmm. That's made of brick and stone, and that has it has like gravitas to it. Literally.
Yeah.
And so walking around in, I remember I was just walking around the first part of the game, and like actually having to crane my neck to look up at buildings, is really there's something about the physicality of that where you actually have to move your position and like almost your stance to. And not only that, but the whole building isn't really in your frame of view. Like you have to kind of step back from it to, like as you would in real life, obviously.
Yeah, it changes everything.
It just changed everything. And so it was really strange how much just walking around, like not even really doing anything, but just sort of walking around and looking at things. And of course, the world was really stylized. So, I mean, I've played Rift demos and 3D VR demos and stuff. They're trying to be photorealistic. And those tend to break down really quickly because they're not photorealistic. Like,
right.
They look sort of like that on a screen when you're sitting far away, but the second you start walking around inside one, it breaks down immediately and you're like, okay, I'm in a digital place. Yeah. But the thing with jazz punk is it's so stylized, it felt more like walking around inside a cartoon.
That's strange.
Something that's really hard to convey to people because that there is really no real life.
Yeah, there's no reference, right?
Yeah, exactly.
No reference for that. You don't have any idea what that would feel like until you're actually there. So that's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
I've had like zero interest in doing Oculus Rift stuff, to be honest. I'm always like, whatever, VR, it's fine. But this actually sounds kind of ridiculous to me, because to me before, like the photorealistic stuff was where I kind of got lost on it. I was like, I don't know if that's really interesting to me in any way.
Yeah, I don't know that that's necessarily the most interesting avenue, but definitely making, I think the idea of making places that can't exist in the real world, that's really where you unlock some really amazing potential, because nothing in the real world looks like jazz punk.
Like wake up in like a Tim Burton movie or something.
Exactly. Like the, where everything is just has this really like heavy feeling to it. And I think the most fascinating thing for me was I do this art style where some things are perfectly two-dimensional in the 3D space. Like I'll make objects like a sheet of paper or a tree or something, right? And the tree will be, I'll very intentionally make the tree a 2D object and not a lush 3D photorealistic tree. And that doesn't exist in the real world. And so your brain really gets like fascinated by that stuff because it's not used to seeing something with absolutely no depth to it. And so walking up to just like something that is only one polygon, it has no width. It has literally no width. And even a sheet of paper or human hair, your brain can still look at that at a high enough resolution to go, oh, this actually has a width to it.
Right. But it just disappears when you're on like right on the side.
Yeah, exactly. And so there's something about walking up to a pure 2D object in 3D space that is really indescribable. And I don't know. That's something I definitely want to play around with going forward. So I don't know. Yeah, we want to explore. Like I have a whole. I've been working on Jazz Punk for 5 years. I've made some other smaller games in the meantime. You know, we still do game jams and stuff as well. So, you know, and I have a wish list of other games I want to make. Totally
awesome.
absolutely. So yeah, I'm hoping Jazzpunk gives us a little bit more freedom to maybe pursue even weirder stuff. I don't know.
Yeah,
that's exciting.
But also, if you know, Jazzpunk is a runaway hit or something, we're not opposed to. I love making Jazzpunk. Obviously, I wouldn't have been working on it this long if I didn't. If it wasn't fun to make, so. And I mean, I've got a whole pile of jokes that they're making in the games.
There we go.
Gotta,
awesome.
I got to shovel those pieces.
Just call it. Just call it Jazzpunk 2 Rejected Jokes.
Yeah. Jazzpunk 2, you know, basketball garbage bin. That's where awesome. That's where all my crumpled up notes can go.
Well, we're about out of time. Where can people find you on the internet, Luis?
Oh, so many places. On Twitter, I am at BeetleKnot. That's Beetle and then not like astronaut. So that's one word. Jazzpunk can be pre-ordered if you are into such a thing at jazzpunk.net. That's one word, jazzpunk.net, or jazzpunk is one word. .net is its own thing. we are on Steam. There is not a convenient Steam link, but you can just Google Jazzpunk Steam and find it. But you can't pre-order it on Steam because whatever, that's how that's set up. Where else? What other thing is there? I don't know. Necrophonegames.com if for some reason you wanted to go to that.
Cool. That's yeah. Are you going to be at any upcoming cons or anything in the near future?
Yes. So we're going to be at GDC, obviously, because okay. The IGF thing. So you can find us in the IGF pavilion, I guess, during GDC.
Which is in beginning of March, right?
Yeah, it's like cool. March 17th or something. Oh, okay. So yeah, we'll be at GDC. We're hoping to go to PAX East as well, which is in April.
Yeah, come hang out. We'll be there.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Yeah. That's like I can take a bus to Boston. Like that's.
Yeah,
that's
we'll come down for sure. Come hang out.
And yeah, you can easily find me. I'm the guy with long hair, and probably I'll be holding like an In-N-Out burger or something. Oh, I can't get those here, and I love them. So yeah, I'll have a piece of food in one hand You'll know it's me.
Excellent, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on, and we're super excited for the game and can't wait to play the full version. So
ooh, you're in for a treat.
Awesome.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, so that was our chat with Luis. He was awesome. Definitely go ahead and download Jazzpunk when it comes out on February 7th, and you can get that on Steam and various other places. So please, please, please check that out. It's,
yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Go pre-order it now if you go to jazzpunk.net, and you can pre-order it for, I think it's $15. Yes, $15.
Totally worth it.
Absolutely worth it, and you're supporting them to say like, yes, we're glad you're putting the game out ahead of time, which is awesome. The games are very good. So.
It's cray.
Yeah.
Great music too.
Oh, yeah.
And we had a question of the week that deals with strange and bizarre games and movies, and it says that what is the strangest or most unique game or film that you've ever experienced? And of course, you guys answered in numbers this week, so thank you. Thank you very much. The first one is actually from a new listener, I believe, Sebastian H., who is at Dripped Dry G Preto. Don't try and string it together. He says, saw The Turin Horse last week, and it's definitely up there as most unique movie I've ever watched. I don't know what that is. Does anyone know what that is?
I'm going to look it up while we're talking.
You're the movie guy. Or you guys are the movie guys.
It's a Hungarian film directed by Bela Tarr and Agnes. And good old Agnes. Starring some people. It was co-written by Tarr and his frequent collaborator. Doesn't say anything about plot.
These Are the Droids You Are Looking For, Canada. Another great podcast. They say movie, Johnny Mnemonic. Still not sure how a dolphin can read minds.
That movie, oh my god.
Sorry. Unique game, XCOM. I missed turn-based strategy. And then he says the whole crew answered this week. Andrew says XCOM. Todd says Azura's Wrath. Rainer says Eternal Darkness. And Rick chose Postal. Oh, geez.
Oh, my God. Postal.
Scott owned it.
Yeah, I did own Postal and the expansion for that. And I remember at the time, I actually got it because somebody gave it to my dad as a joke because he worked at the post office. And you know, he doesn't play games. He's just like, here, you take this. And I said, okay. And then I started playing. I was like, oh my God, this is insane. You should never see this. And also Eternal Darkness. Yes, many times over.
So Justin at Justin says, most unique film was Memento from Christopher Nolan. Why did he write it from Christopher Nolan's Memento?
I don't know.
Just to mess with you.
That movie was pretty, you know, one of his brain-bending ones when it came out. It was kind of like you'd watch it, and then you'd rewatch it, and then you're like, wait, it does go backwards. And, you know, oh, spoiler. 15-year-old spoiler there, sorry.
Oh, my God.
But it's a pretty damn good movie. How about you, Scott? Do you have an answer for this question? On the spot.
For a movie, I can tell you about a strange movie that I own and that you know that I own and the story that we came upon through getting it. I don't know if I've ever told this on the podcast before. But as we've said before, Matt and I used to play music in bands together. So we played a show once at a sort of music/video store, and they had a used DVD section. So we were bored and just sort of flipping through the DVDs, and I found something really weird called, the movie was called Wham Bam Thank You Spaceman. Mm-hmm. And it turns out, man, I bought it based on the cover alone. What's that?
Sounds rather erotic.
Yeah, I bought it just based on the cover alone, and turns out, yeah, that's what it is. It's a weird sort of B-movie 70s style like porno, and it's super strange and the effects are terrible, and it's about these space aliens that come to Earth and wreak sexual havoc all over the planet.
So what is sexual havoc? Can you teach it to me?
I don't necessarily want
to. It's a rejected X-Man.
Yeah.
What does sexual he shoot havoc. From his what does he shoots from his hands?
That's,
see, the real Havoc shoots plasma blasts, so I'd hate to see what sexual Havoc shoots.
I don't want to go into too much detail, but all I will say is that it does not shoot from the hands.
Rather,
it comes from the nose area. And
what?
I will just leave it at that.
I got to see this movie now.
Okay, you're welcome to borrow it. You've been warned, America,
all right.
countries and the rest of the world.
Amazing. Next on the list is Eric, Echav33. He says, The Matrix blew my mind in 1999. I saw it 10 times at the movies and was hooked on all the little Easter eggs in the movie. I have a good Matrix memory too, Eric. I went to the theater to see that in 1999, and I took my buddy Micah, who's now a doctor, before he could even drive, I took him to this movie. And we didn't know what the movie was. I hadn't even seen a trailer for it before I saw it.
Are you shitting?
No, I'm totally serious, because wow. I had just moved away. And I went and saw it kind of just being like, ah, it's an action movie. And I remember leaving that theater and just I was totally just it blew my mind. It was unbelievable. And I think, honestly, that movie changed action films forever. It showed that they didn't have to be, you know, the Arnold Schwarzenegger blow them up kind of action film. Mm-hmm. They got a little bit more cerebral after that. Well, not all action films, but I think it showed that a cerebral kind of smart, expensive looking action film could actually make a lot of money. So I loved The Matrix. It was great.
Agreed. Yeah.
We actually saw it. I don't know if you're, I'm pretty sure you were there, Scott. I think it was you, me, and it was the crew. You, me, Andrew, Chris went.
Hmm.
And Adam. I think it was all of us. There was a group of us, and I'm pretty sure you were part of it. But the thing I remember most vividly, weirdly, is that we all stood up when the movie ended. And that Rage Against the Machine song plays. And it was like such a badass. It was just so like such a finishing moment to that movie. It felt so perfect. We were all like, yeah! Like when we walked out of the theater. It was so good.
We were all stoked on Rage back then too. So it just made it that much better.
Back then?
Well, you know what I mean. Like that was the shit, you know? I can't tell you the last time I listened to Rage Against the Machine, but it's still, very long still time. Awesome.
Yeah. It is still awesome.
There you go. Peachy Anna, Anna Schumann, who you all follow on Twitter already, says, In high school, my best friend and I watched Fight Club for the first time. We had a moment where neither of us thought we were real and that our own minds had made each other up. That's awesome.
Wow.
I love it.
You know why that blows my mind, guys?
Why is that?
Why?
In high school, she watched Fight Club for the first time.
Yeah.
We love you, bro.
So Bethany at HemiArt, our buddy.
Hi, Bethany.
Our buddy Bethany says, I've seen so many strange movies, but I'll go ahead and nominate The Room since it's a classic.
I still haven't seen The Room.
I still haven't either, with like trepidation of not
seeing
that movie.
Yeah, I'm kind of like on the fence. It took a while for me to see Birdemic too, but I was
Birdemic. So good. With a group. Don't watch it by yourself.
Yeah, Birdemic. It's definitely a group film.
So Ash, do you have an answer for the question?
I do. I have a game and a film. My film is Mulholland Falls, which is a David Lynch film. Is that the David Lynch film?
Yeah, it is.
That is okay. There's one that has Nick Nolte that's not Mulholland Falls that I always get mixed up.
No, Mulholland Drive.
There you go. Mulholland Drive. David Jones. Mulholland Falls is the one with Jennifer Connelly. Yeah. So Mulholland Drive is one of the most bizarre films I've ever seen, because I've seen it four or five times and I still really haven't quite figured it out yet. And I don't even know if it actually does make sense. You know what I mean? I don't know if it actually does, but it's beautifully shot, really spooky, great performance by Naomi Watts. There's something really haunting about that movie, and it kind of gets under my skin. So that's my movie. The game is Deadly Premonition, and I'm kind of surprised people have not put Deadly Premonition on this, which is a very Twin Peaks-esque I guess it's sort of an adventure exploration game with like this weird, quirky Japanese game. And it opens up with like kids getting sacrificed by this like great tree. And then it's one of the most fucked up. And I never beat it. I got like 3 hours in and I couldn't handle it because it's just so oddly shitty and like in this weird, quirky way. I don't even really know how to describe it, but it kept getting recommended to me as being like this really bizarro game, and so I gave it a shot, and it's definitely an incredibly bizarro game. So that was mine.
Awesome.
You need to read, I think I talked about this comic last week a little bit, and it's one of the other things I've been doing, but did I tell you about Revival?
No, I don't think so.
No.
Revival is this, it's a new comic book out on Image, and it's set in like rural, I think Wisconsin maybe, and it's about all of a sudden this people that died start coming back to life, but not as zombies, just like they're just like dead one day and totally alive the next.
Oh.
And it becomes this like huge thing, and everybody doesn't know what's going on, and then the plot follows this like sheriff and his daughter, and his daughter's a cop, and then his other daughter ends up being you have to read it, but it's very Twin Peaksy. I think you would like it. It's because it's weird. Sounds it's like if you took Fargo and Twin Peaks and put them together, you would have Revival.
Oh, cool.
So just came to my mind. That's all. At Cliffy Joel says, a little game called Catherine, probably one of the weirdest games I've ever played. Those silly Japanese. Now, Catherine was the puzzle game, right? It was like
it's a puzzle game, kind of an oddly sexual puzzle
yeah,
game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That is probably a very weird one. I've only looked at it and read about it. I've never played it.
I've considered playing the game because I like puzzle games, but I didn't know if it was going to be super bizarro and maybe too Japanese for my particular tastes.
Right, yeah.
Amy Van Shake, friend of ours, says, Year Walk, such a surreal game experience. I love the design and story. One of my favorite mobile games. I can tell you that right now, if you go onto the App Store on iOS, that game, actually that developer whose name escapes me right now, has a couple of games. I think they have a new one out called Device 6, which they describe as sort of a bizarre sort of text adventure, but it's like more than that. I don't know how to describe it, but they seem to make these very artistic sort of game experiences. So I think that's something that I will be looking into in the very near future is Year Walk and Device 6 and other games from this developer.
Justin Banks at Midtown 583, thank you for always answering.
Yeah, man, we love you so much.
Says stacking.
So much.
Playing as a different ability-enabled nesting doll was unique. Now, you played this, Scott, right?
Yeah, that's a good pick. I mean, especially like when you think about what's weird, you know, sometimes you think you go towards maybe the surreal, but stacking is kind of a weird game, especially as a concept that somebody probably had to pitch at one time, and then other people were like, yes, let's make that into a game about nesting dolls. That's a great idea, you know? But it's, you know, of course it's Double Fine, so that's, they find a way to make games like that work, and stacking definitely fits the bill. It's super weird. I mean, it's exactly what it is. You, all the characters are nesting dolls. At different times in the game, you could sort of subsume them or, you know, leave them. And as you sort of jump into the nesting dolls, you take on different abilities. You take on the abilities of that character.
Can I just want to get dick for a second here, but who was that game for? Because there's never been anyone ever in the history of time that woke up and was like, I want to play a game about a fucking nesting doll.
It's,
do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's one thing, like, they put out Trench, and everybody wants to be a giant mech, you know?
But they put out costume quests, you know? They put out...
But everyone likes Halloween and superheroes and, like, transforming and, like, you know, becoming characters.
Yeah, right.
Nobody ever in history has been like, I want to be a nesting doll.
In sort of this, like, sort of Cold War-esque throwback.
Yeah, like,
era.
I want to be a depressed nesting doll. Like, yeah. What in the hell?
What's impressive is that the game actually works. And I think maybe to answer your question specifically is that it's Double Fine. So when you see something weird like that and you go, oh, it's Double Fine, you kind of know, like, yeah, I'll probably enjoy this no matter what it is, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
MD Gar on Twitter says, Kerbal Space Program, never spent so many hours in a game with no enemies or any stated objective, just space.
Space.
And I love talking to those Kerbal guys at PAX, and hopefully they're going to be at East this year so we can talk to them again. I'm not a Kerbal person, but I think it's just awesome because this is a game all about exploration and physics and creation, which is just super cool. So I like that.
It
they're
inspires
doing so
the Lego kid in me. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're nominated for the IGF alongside Jazzpunk as well. So Game of the Year, Indie Game of the Year is... Kerbal Space is up there with a bunch of others, so good for them. Uh-oh, Scott, you may have to use that mailbag song you got there. We got something from Robert Freemering.
Mailbag. I'm going with most unique and enjoyed film. A Movie Hero with Jeremy Sisso came on That Guy Thursdays on cable, and it's totally for movie people. He believes he's in his own movie and talks to his audience, which is us. Also makes things more interesting for his audience. Points out, quote, suspicious characters, quote, love interest, not just to us, but to the people that he meets. Also tries hiring a sidekick. People think he's crazy, a bit odd, him including us, the audience, into it. But once you are used to it, the movie is awesome. I mean, just based on what you've described here, the premise of this movie sounds amazing.
Insane, yeah.
Have you guys ever seen a Movie Hero? Too.
I have not.
I have not.
A lot of things to add to the list here in this list.
Yeah. I feel like we picked up a lot of homework this week.
Hey, what's that, guys? Oh, you want to hear mine? Sure, I'll tell you mine. Thanks for
I was just kidding. Jeez.
I'm not going to lie. I forgot.
Natural transitions.
I actually have two for each for different reasons, and I was trying to narrow them down, but I don't care anymore, so I'm just going to say them both for both.
It.
For movies, weirdly enough, Ash, mine is Lost Highway, which is a David Lynch film that weirded me out when it came out in high school, and I didn't understand it at all, but somehow watched it like 40 times anyways. And the other one, which Scott will remember, was I used to work at a video rental store, and we would go and pick up 5 horror movies or something, just weird movies every week, and watch them. And one time we got one called Neon Maniacs, and it is the story of this, I think, nuclear waste that turns 5, I'm assuming, homeless people that were in the subway sewer system into mutant creatures that are each themed to weird things like a caveman and like President Lincoln or whatever. They were all weird and made no sense, and the movie made no sense because then they come out of the sewer and like terrorize a prom, right, Scott? I think
that sounds right.
It's really weird. They terrorize a prom, and then they end up, the best part about it and the weird, what made it the most weird, was that our friend Andrew was watching it with us at the time. It was usually just the four of us, four, me, Adam, Scott, and Andrew, just watching movies, maybe Chris. And Andrew goes, man, wouldn't it be weird if the movie just ended right now? And I swear to God, like 5 seconds later, the credits started rolling. It was like the weirdest, because there was no reason for the movie to end. They walked into a hallway, and he was like, "Wouldn't it be weird if it just ended?" And then it just ended for nothing, for like no reason.
They ran out of money.
Pretty much, we think so. The movie is near impossible to get, so if you manage to find it, just watch it. Why not? You know,
hold on, it might be on amazing. Amazon Prime. Let's take hold on.
It wasn't on Prime. You can buy the DVD, I think, was the only way I've been able to find it. Mm. It was like weirdly on Netflix rental for a little while.
But, I think it is now an Amazon Prime movie, by the way.
No, it's $23 for the DVD. Is that what you're looking at?
No, it says watch now, Amazon Prime.
Oh, Jesus Christ,
Neon
we're watching
Maniacs.
It.
What? There you go. On IMDb, it's got a 4.3 out of 10, but on Amazon, it's got 4.5 stars. Three and a half stars.
There you go.
Yeah. 21 people, man. 3.5 stars. Amazing. That says something.
So my two games, which weirdly are kind of the same thing, the one game that was actually a legitimately good game but was kind of unique and mind-blowing for me at the time was Metal Gear. Because it just did so many weird things, like the putting a controller in the story is weird, and like everything was just out there. I never understood totally what Liquid Snake was versus Solid Snake, and they were all just like weird things that I didn't get, but I loved it, and it absolutely grabbed me, and it was like still a game to this day that I look back on really fondly.
That's impressive.
And the other one was Seaman.
Oh, Seaman.
Oh, Seaman. Yeah, that game is...
We killed him like 3 times in our house. It was like a group mission to keep him alive, and we would all turn on the Dreamcast. And I don't know if you took – Adam and I definitely took part trying to keep that damn thing alive and talking to Leonard Nimoy every day. But
such a weird fucking experience.
It was such a weird game, right? Like it just – it made – I don't know why it got made. Like I just don't get it. I don't know who pitched that game and who
said
yes.
People wonder why the Dreamcast collapsed and didn't sell well.
But then you think about it, and I feel like if that came out as an indie game on Steam right now, people would be like fucking shooting their shit.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
How amazing it would be.
Oh, dude, you played Seaman.
Yeah.
Is that. What segment of the gaming population were you trying to to cover there?
There's like this growing contingent of like weird indie game hipsters.
It's music. Yeah. It's just like music. You know?
It is.
It's
absolutely
weird. Dude, if you played Seaman, it's like so innovative. Ah.
That's because the game industry has been around long enough and grown big enough now that we can have like pop games and like, you know, the hardcore games. And then we have like indie games that people really, you know, like,
yeah,
you got to be cool to find this game. And you're like, oh, Jesus, why doesn't everybody just play it? It's fine.
Just play games. And with the, you know, with the Kinect now, you could easily do, you know, Seaman 2 : more Seaman. Right?
God.
I'm serious, but I mean, like the technology's there.
Oh yeah, I mean we could build it.
There's definitely a Seaman and colon joke somewhere in there.
That's what I was laughing at. Anyway,
going out on a high note, you guys.
Well, let's get out of here.
I forgot I was going to say in the beginning, but I forgot, so I'm going to say it at the end.
Yes.
It is Oscar season. Best Pictures got announced. And I am challenging myself again to watch all 10. And I'm starting with Captain Phillips. So we'll see how it goes.
How did you do last year? Do you remember?
I did not get even a quarter of the way through them.
Because the first year you did, you got them all, right? Or like
first
seven.
How long have we been doing this? Is this
two,
our
3 years?
Fourth Oscar, I think?
We're in our fourth year, so we finished year 3.
I think this is our fourth Oscar, though, because we started in November.
Oh, wow.
So I've done 2 out of 3 so far, and this is the fourth. So I missed 1 year. I've done the first two I did.
Cool. Beginning of Matt's Oscar challenge.
I think I'm going to do Captain Phillips because it's rentable, and then I might go see Wolf of Wall Street this week.
Cool.
Yeah. Watch some movies. Now
wrap
it up, Ash.
Let's do it. Guys, thank you so much for listening to episode 137 of the Rated NA podcast. Thanks to Luis Hernandez from Necrophone Games.
Yes.
Definitely look for Jazz Punk available on Steam on the 7th of February. And you guys can find us on Twitter, and that's @NerdAppropriate. You can email us all directly, and that is Matt, Scott, Hillary with one L, and Ash @NerdAppropriate.com. Send us an email like Robert did this week, and we will, of course, read your email on the air. No matter what it says. And you can also find us on Facebook, and that's /NerdAppropriate. We're everywhere, and we'll be back next week. We have some guests coming up, and we'll announce them a little later date once everything's locked down. But thank you guys so much for listening. We'll see you soon.
Yes.
See ya.
Sorry, I wanted to sneak the hot dog joke in. It felt like appropriate at that moment. No?
I'm not touching that one.
Hot dog.
Whoa.
Do you want to?
Did Scott die? What happened to Scott?
He said, hold on a minute, and he walked away.
Oh, I didn't hear the hold on.
I'm right here. Yeah. I didn't go anywhere.
Oh, okay. Oh, sure.
We should start this whole episode over again.
No.
Would you like to start in with your question again?
No.
Let's start. We'll try
you
that
want
one
me
more time.
Say, how was AC Liberation Hot Dog?
Yeah, because that was funny. That was funny when you said it. And I bet it'll be even funnier the second time.
Oh, God. So how was Assassin's Creed Liberation? Hot dog!
Hot dog! See, I still like it.
That's what the HD stands for, right?